AmericanWorkersRadio.com.
You're listening to American Workers Radio, a national network promoting American-made products with your host, Michael Blihash.
Well, welcome once again to another edition of American Workers Radio here on 860. As you know, we serve the southeastern Pennsylvania and the entire tri-state area. And if you live in that area and you have a family member and friend that you'd like to get involved with the broadcast and all of our efforts, give them a call right now and ask them to tune in to 860 AM. If not, ask others to go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com and click on the Listen Live link, and they'll be able to be part of our broadcast and all the information that we'll be sharing with you. And we'll also be reminding you to look at the front page of American Workers Radio, where you'll find the Buy American app by Go for USA, and that's Mike Sessions. And I'll tell you, that's been a nice way for us to get some promo. We also have our direct link from the radio program, so our family of listeners continues to grow. And before I go on to the next subject, I want to just say thank you to the people that I meet in my travels, because this is where it's all at. As I said so often, wherever I go, I do take flyers of the broadcast, and people know our panel members. They know their faces. They know what they're all about. They can tune in on many, many platforms now, like I've never even imagined. But it's the world is made very small as a result of the internet. Well, today with us, we have our founder of the Made in America store, Mark Andel, Larkin Connolly, who is very involved with SCORE. He is now a business advocate and SCORE mentor. And also Rich Logis, the principal of RJL Technology Integration. Our engineer is happily on board today, Henry Chaplinsky. And I'm Michael Blihash, always proud and pleased to be with you to spread the word about many good things happening in the United States of America as a result of efforts like the Buy American Made campaign and American Workers Need You. You know, we look at the media, and we're going to talk about that today. And during the second half of today's broadcast, I'm expecting a special guest. But we'll hold off on announcing that person until he's able to finish his interview, which he's doing right now. And hopefully he'll be able to join us at 11:30. But ladies and gentlemen, Larkin, Rich, Mark, Henry, and all of our listeners, it's the time of year when people are out buying a lot of special greeting cards for moms and dads coming up, graduations, weddings, and everything else. What I'm asking all of you to do now to help our greeting card companies is look at the back of the card before you make your purchase. I've been saying that for a long time, and I am very pleased to report the amount of new greeting card companies in the stores with Made in the USA cards is unbelievable. American greeting cards, but there are lots of new card companies that have entered the market. That's what this campaign is all about. Names I've never seen before, but they proudly list on there, this card is made in the USA. Now, I just want to say before I go to our panel members, in the last few years, we're seeing more of those cards. We're seeing more competition. But just think how many jobs are created by this one greeting card company. You have the printers, the designers who make the cards. You have the packers, the shippers, the sales representatives. And that goes all the way down to the staff at the store where you shop. And that goes down the line, and that's with every product. And Mark Andel is a perfect example of what can be done going from 50 or 100 products to 7,000 products. And that's what he did. But Mark took it a step further. He demanded that even the cellophane and the fasteners all be made right here in the USA. So I'm going to start off today with Mark Andel asking him what's new in your neck of the woods and how are you seeing things happening in the USA?
How you doing, Mike and Larkin, Rich, Henry, Mike? A lot going on. You know, again, this week, I think I passed you the link to the USA Today, a big article on Made in America, and it was a fair article, but I don't think it. You know, it was well written, but me and Rich got together and we wrote a letter to the editor, and we kept it pretty simple, but basically we're saying, hey, there's a place up in Western New York called the Made in America store. We've made it pretty easy for you to buy Made in America products. And the article had WeatherTech in, which a company I respect. You see the commercials even during the Super Bowl. WeatherTech really gets it. The owner gets it. He knows how creating jobs matters. But people can do their part by buying Made in America products. You know, the article said it's a slow go. It's hard to find certain things. But people have to do it. They have to do their homework. We have to be consistent with our message. We have to continually educate and raise awareness. It has to be it's a necessity to build and produce more than you use in your own country. This has to happen. Larkin, we discussed supply chains are down, but it's going to take time, we know. But the article was okay. We wrote back to the a letter to the editor. We've got the response that they received it, basically stating that we've got 7,000 products. We support almost 500 privately owned American businesses. They need the citizens of the United States help to buy Made in America products. So, Mike, big article, a lot of stuff going on with the movement. We've got our 7 years, 7,000 product event coming up in about a week and a half, and we're very fired up. But the movement is very alive, and thanks to the listeners and the people that go out and do this every day and said, no, it matters. Buy Made in America. You can make a difference.
You know, Mark, I have to say this to you, Larkin and Rich, and all of our listeners, everywhere I go, somebody has an opinion. People tell me about their personal stories and what happened to them. At the age of 52, they were laid off from a job because the job was moving overseas. It took them 2 or 3 years to get back into a stable job. And I always say to people, a stable job for working age and able-bodied Americans has always really been the key to America's success. But people in the leadership of America simply don't understand that. They don't care about that. They only care about themselves. As Rich said many times, hitting the lottery is one thing, but getting elected to a national office is another type of a lottery because you're really in for a long time. What do you say to that, Rich?
Good morning, Michael, and to all of our listeners. Very excited for our guest to be on today. And Mark, my pleasure on helping with that. So full disclosure for our listeners that when I was a newspaper reporter, I worked at a paper owned by USA Today's publisher, Gannett, there in Virginia. So I was employed there for 4 years. And to this day, still very thankful for the opportunity to have worked as a reporter for over 4 years at the paper. I worked at a couple of weekly papers that were owned by Gannett. So when I went to Mark and I read the story, and you know, I'm a big headline guy, even though the headline is headlines can be deceiving, but I saw the headline said Trump's call to buy American isn't boosting sales of U.S. goods. And I called Mark and I said, Mark, the executive order was signed a week ago. I mean, so a week later, we're not seeing a boost. Right. So that was like the whole idea of this was like, so the premise of the story is, you know, like the approach was, and I told Mark, I said, I think it's just another excuse to be somewhat anti the president to say, well, it's a week later, folks, and we're not seeing anything. You know, like let's let this unfold. And I would encourage for, you know, if Curtis is listening and others who have access to the president, I would really strongly encourage and reiterate what we said, I think it was a week or 2 weeks ago, Michael, that in the president's businesses, when it comes to Made in America, lead from the front. You know, do the thing for your own business in terms of Made in America. If things are not going to be 100% made here, get a vast majority percentage of things made here. And when you lead from the front, right, Mark, you don't have to worry about having to explain that away. I attend a lot of political meetings down here. We have a saying that when in politics, if you're explaining, you're losing. And I think for the president, I'd really strongly encourage him to personally lead from the front as well as his businesses on that. So, you know, my pleasure, Mark, and I, the letter to the editor we wrote was essentially to say, hey, thanks for the coverage. It's great to talk about Made in America, but Made in America is actually thriving and alive and well. And for Mark's perspective here, the reason that Mark knows that is because Mark's been living it every day, living and breathing it and owning it for the last 7 years, right, Mark? So to go from zero to 7,000, to go from zero locations to what is it now, 6-7 locations that you have, that sounds like a movement on the up and up to me.
Well, you know, I have to say, just add to this very great conversation is the president and all the people who are assisting him. And I did have contact with Curtis this week, and he's now part of the administration. And so hopefully we'll be able to get him back on the air in the near future. But, you know, we have to start telling the people quite point blank. Private sector businesses were welcomed by foreign nations and merchandisers to move out, OUT of America, to reduce their operational costs, labor costs, and tax obligations. Tax obligations is the biggest thing, because taxes come as a result of the people making a profit. So in many cases, people were hiding their profits not to pay the taxes. And so it became a vicious cycle. So why go through all that and pay accountants and everybody else? Just move it all over the world and then sell it in America. America's businesses were shown by well-spoken foreign merchandisers how easy and how much more profitable it would be to allow workers in another part of the world to do the work and then just ship the products back to America. And here we are with no jobs, just we're customers. We're expected to go into the store and buy it all up. And that's Michael, what has to be said. That's what has to be said by the president. I think he should do one to A to Z, one to 10. These are the reasons I am trying to make these changes. Lower the taxes to bring the businesses here and keep them here. It puts end the regulations, because that's what killed. Too many regulations. You know, you have so many of this, so many of that. Two regulations off for every new regulation. It's a good deal as far as I'm concerned. But we need the people going into the stores to speak up. And I go into the stores, and the people at the cash registers, the managers, the owners all know when I walk in the door, I am there to either look and be happy because I found the new American-made label, or I'm there to be disappointed because the product I want is not there. So if those managers in those stores know that I am walking in, it's great for all of our listeners and everybody on the panel to do the same.
And Michael, quick point on this before we get to Larkin, just as a credit to Mark and everyone in the movement, from Mike Sessions to everyone who's really truly part of the same team here. It transcends political ideologies. It transcends whether you're in a political party or not, and hopefully will transcend however all of us may have voted in the 2016 election. But if there's one thing that's consistent about the history of this republic in 241 years, it's that we haven't been exceptional and innovative in the place that everyone flees where they live to come here without all the men and women who took incredible risks, who sacrificed so much, whether it's we're talking our vets to political leaders, to business leaders, everything has, that despite the periods of our history that we don't like and are dark and are embarrassing, even though there's a lot of people in America who right now think it's okay to rewrite and revise history, which is an Americanized version of Stalinism, but that's a discussion for another time. So that's been consistent from day one, even from the actual founding of our republic. So Mark's part of that, Mike's part of that. It's not going to happen with us just sitting around, right? And you know, the thing is, Mark, like I always tell your story to people that, you know, I always say there was a bad thing that happened. You lost a big account, and then you decided to go and take a risk. You decided to to kind of quiet out the naysayers, quiet out the people who said you were a little nutty, and you went after it. And if you want to go after something, go after it, because chances are there are others out there who are after the identical thing you are, that you're after. And I think that's a really great summation of what it, whatever, excuse me, of all of the things and all the people who are involved in Made in America right now. And this is on the up and up. So, Mark, I hope that your letter is going to get printed, because readers need to know, hey, you know what? Made in America's actually, it's not like underground thing anymore. It's now starting to come back to the forefront.
Right, exactly. Larkin, how are you doing?
Good morning. Very interesting conversation, gentlemen. Good morning to our listeners and to Henry, Michael, Mr. Andel, as I prefer to refer to him as, and Rich. Begs for me to make a comment about one of the maladies, I think, in our country right now. I listen to people. We've become so fanatical. I listen to people, and they say, did you know that from their junior year at the University of Arkansas until the 10th year anniversary, Bill Clinton used to beat his wife on a regular basis? And I go, really? Where did you hear that? Well, I read it online on a blog. It must be true. We have such a tendency, as we sit on our extremes, to find something that's printed the way we want it printed, and then to throw it out as a quote, like it really happened that way, like it's really the truth. And this is where I think journalism has just gotten way off the deep end, way off the deep end. They all of a sudden think that their opinion is primary to their editorializing the news and the order that it's going to come on and what they're going to say. I've got the fastest thumb in the West. I go from ABC to CBS, although obviously Pally has talked to Muir because they both go into commercials at the same time. NBC seems to be a little bit behind. But if you really go out of your way to watch all three, there are those days when you scratch your head and go, Are both of these agencies reporting on the same day in history, the same day that just happened?
Well said.
How can they possibly see things so differently? So I make a plea to our listeners. Michael can plead that you could go in and search out Made in America labels. That kind of demand is very organic, and it's going to take forever to make that work. What you can do is support the companies, support the politicians that support the companies, and call journalists to task for writing obviously somewhat politically motivated articles about Made in America. And I think that Rich hit that nail right on the head when he said, he signed the executive order last week. I mean, I know we all think that, or Trump thinks that he can do some pretty magnanimous things pretty quickly, but that's a little on the absurd side. And I finally bring to task I don't even know what to call him, because he's barely an entertainer, because I don't think he's funny. And he's just radical, and people will say, yeah, well, you lean to the right, so you wouldn't like him. But this guy on CBS, Colbert, that monologue he had last week, I guarantee you, if half of that had been uttered out of Trump's mouth, and some of it has been, it would be talked about on network news for 5 days. But for him to go through this tirade, and I can read it, except I know Michael would faint as I got halfway through it. If I were to read it when he said, Mr. President, you attract more skinheads than free Rogaine, a little on the funny side. You have more people marching against you than cancer. Cheap shot. Very cheap shot. You talk like a Sang language gorilla that got hit in the head. Are these supposed to be funny? And somewhere along the line, where do we draw that line of respect? And if, you know, as my father said, if you don't have respect, keep your mouth shut. And, of course, what he claimed Mr. Trump's mouth was good for Vladimir Putin is so disgusting that it far, to me, exceeds that sophomoric comment that Trump made on a bus that he thought was being made quietly and privately. Not a good remark, and I don't condone it. But where do we draw the line? Why can one guy speak like this? This is just garbage, and it's on mainstream TV, and it's not even brought up. Every day on NBC, on CBS News, they play portions of Colbert's monologue the night before, and he can talk about nothing except anti-Trump stuff. Now all of a sudden, when he goes through a tirade like this, they prefer not to even say anything. They kept quiet instead of admonishing him. So this is a long-winded way of getting around to just come. Some guy writes a book. Because somebody has the intelligence to put out a blog, just because it's written in the USA Today, just because it's on front news, on front page of the New York Times, does not mean that it's correct and or legitimate. So please, don't look to the press for all of your information and all of your history. Really go out and do your own homework to make sure what you're being told has some sense of legitimacy.
You know, you're right, Larkin. And you know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see a television show from 8 to 10 p.m. every day on a non-Fox, non-CNN channel that's bringing attention to how we can create jobs, visit communities. You remember how Muir was going around to the various communities, and even Waters was going to different places asking questions. People loved it. We have got to get something like that moving where people can show the example. Mark, you could be the first one to be shown on this broadcast to show what is really possible. But we have probably a dozen and one Marks around the country, but they're not going to be well known because they're in a smaller community, a bigger community, whatever, but that community is not trying to promote that place because they're getting more money. The press gets the money from the people who advertise. That's the bottom line. The big merchandisers are bringing in the dollars for the stuff they want you to go to Walmart, Kmart, Target, or whatever to buy. And guess what? I've gone store to store, and I've looked at the products that they're advertising, and you know where they're from? Not in the USA.
Well, of course they're not. But, you know, the press is a business now. It used to be a vocation. It used to be who, what, when, where, why, and how. And then you would turn to the opinion page, and there the newspaper and its editorial board would opine for the entire page, which is just fine. Now, they hide their on the first page in the second paragraph of a leaked story. You know exactly how the New York Times feels about it. You know what? When I'm reading my newspaper, I could care less what the New York Times thinks. I couldn't possibly care less than what they think about current circumstances. They are that irrelevant.
Larkin, you know, I'm sorry to reiterate this, and I'm sorry to keep repeating myself to our listeners, but you know, all of this right here is the precursor to, how do I want to say this, Michael? I've used an expression on this show before called the Democrat Media Industrial Complex. The vast majority of visible, trafficked media, television, print, or online, the vast majority of it is Democrat-leaning, Democrat sycophants, bias, whatever you want to call it. The election brought to the forefront something that, as a former journalist, mortifyingly horrified me. The fact that that free enterprise media companies would so enmesh themselves and entrench themselves with the DNC and with the Clinton campaign. It wasn't bias. It was actual collusion at the level of the Pravda newspaper in the Soviet Union.
Which I want to add something just to clarify why this has been taking place for so long. Working a little bit in the political arena, I see that the press and the merchandisers, the foreign business people, are all working together. They did promote certain people for national office, mainly because they would keep things the way they were, which means the people in the White House wouldn't complain about all the foreign stuff. They wouldn't hit the NAFTA and CAFTA and TTP and any of that. It would all just continue on as though business was going as usual and the way it should be. We have a change now where people are saying, we don't want all these things. These agreements were made without our consent. Maybe they should have been put on the ballot for the people to vote. And that is why, Rich, it looks like the Democratic Party is mainly behind many of these media people, but the media people are protecting their advertising dollars.
Absolutely. You know, Mike, you guys, you must support the country you live in. I mean, period. And if you're a citizen, buy in Made in America, I can't think of a better way that you could help our children's future than buy Made in America products. I mean, I hope the listeners, what you guys are talking about with corrupt media, I hope they watch enough different channels. They learn that it is corrupt, and you got to watch what you listen before you pass it on. But I can't think of, when we're talking about Made in America, USA Today articles, all these articles, hopefully our guest comes on, I can't think of a better way to help our children than to produce more jobs, skilled trades, more work, so they can provide food, shelter, and clothing and be a provider for their families in their own country.
You know, Rich, we mentioned a few minutes ago about a separate channel. Maybe it's time for a Skype channel or an internet channel or something where Americans speak up and are able to call in and be part of the action, not just the canned, pre-made, you know, guests coming on the same guests night after night with the same old opinions. We come on and we allow each other to speak. And that is why people love our broadcast, because we're not trying to lead people down one particular path. We're allowing everybody's opinion to be heard.
So what you have just described, and I know it's probably got all of them in Washington, D.C. rolling over in their grave, but what you've just described, it to some degree or another, is as a C-SPAN.
Yes. C-SPAN for American workers. I mean, there must be 1,001 people that could appear on this show, and we may have one on the second half of our broadcast who's going to do some great speaking about his latest accomplishments. But the thing is, there's nobody. I mean, we watch CNN, we watch Fox, we watch Fox Business. It's all the same type of opinions, but there's no solutions. I can give you I can sit here all day and talk about the problems, but what is the solution? When you go to a doctor, you want to know what he's going to prescribe to end your problem. You go to school, at the end of 4 years, you know you're going to get your graduation certificate and move to the next college or whatever you're going to do. But when you're putting people on welfare programs and just unemployment, there's no end result.
You know, and one of the things that we've completely failed, and you're comment that we go to school and what their expectations there are. And this is what I found in reinventing myself now that I've stepped down from the SCORE thing and leadership at SCORE, is we do a horrible, horrible job at educating our children. We educate them to a test. which we think should be the standard. And that's egregious. But you know what's even more egregious? Is that we think somewhere along the lines, these educators and these unions and these administrators think that the children are graduating prepared for a job. Well, they might be. They might be. But what they're not prepared for is how to keep that job. And that's
right.
A very serious problem. And nobody ever tells them how to keep it. They just tell them, you know, here's how to just set up a 2x4, and here's how to lay a cement driveway. Here's how to do all of this technical stuff, and we teach them all this, but we fail to give them that social and emotional education that shows them how to keep the job.
Exactly.
Fit into society and make a difference.
And, you know, Larkin, you're absolutely right. And now is the time of year to contact national, state, local elected leaders, and also school boards, and urge them to expand technology and the trades and everything else that is going to allow the boy or girl to leave the school with some level of something to offer an employer. That's not happening.
I'm happy to say. I'm happy to say real quick, Michael, and to Larkin, I can't say it exactly yet, but later this year, after exactly the comment, Larkin, that you made, that's going to be my segue where I'm going to say, Larkin, great point. Please go and read my book, because Logis is going to be publishing this year. This is it, Michael. This is my first. This is going to be my first book this year. It's coming out. All our listeners want to know, don't worry. I'll tease it along the way. But when Larkin will say something, let's just say anytime there's a comment about the youth, or as we said in My Cousin Vinny, the Utes. the next response is going to be, great point. Go read my book.
Well, ladies and gentlemen and panel members, I want to introduce our special guest. And he is the author of What If Things Were Made in America Again? His name is James A. Stuber. And I want to tell you, James, that you're on the radio broadcast today with Larkin Conley, Rich Logis, and also Mark Andel. And I'm Michael Blihash. Our engineer is Henry Chaplinsky. And we're really happy to welcome you to the broadcast. You are a man of our thinking. And I want to say a little bit about yourself, and then we can talk with each other for the next portion of the broadcast. James.
Thank you, Michael. And Larkin, Rich, and Mark, pleasure to be with you today. A little bit about myself would be, let me just start with roots, which are in Pittsburgh and Ohio, where my family all worked in the steel mills. And that's always been kind of what drove me, was I've had a heart for working people. So when I studied political science and then went to work in Washington, I worked on Capitol Hill for a member of Congress who also was driven by that principle. His name was Paul Rogers. And I was honored to work with him on legislation, always with the idea of how will this affect ordinary Americans. So I went on, got a law degree, practiced some law, did entrepreneurial things with my clients. But a few years ago, I had a light bulb moment that put me onto the project that resulted in this book. So that's kind of the background.
Well, I'll tell you, I saw a little bit about your thing on the internet, and I really, what struck me is the picture of your four children. And what you said under the picture, it says, although I love this picture, it also haunts me. My question is this, where will my children, we have a conversation with the kids, what is their future going to be? Jim, tell us about that.
Well, toward the end of my research, I realized that this problem we've had for 70 years of sending jobs overseas has only gotten worse, because now, in just the very recent years, we're sending what we might have thought were the better jobs, and I actually contest that, but the idea of the high-skilled, white-collar, design type jobs, they're going offshore too. And so this idea that, oh, I'll just have my kids do something else, really is slipping through our fingers. And so when you have that conversation with your children, Do you sit down and try to think of which jobs are not tradable and which jobs are not going to be taken by somebody from India? And then say, okay, kids, don't study for that because, you know, I don't think that's going to be around any longer. And then if they're just looking for the jobs that we think are going to remain here, think about all the competition there's going to be for those jobs because all those other kids' parents are having the same conversation. And so then you end up with this hyper-competition for those few jobs, and that's just not a future that I want for my children or for other Americans' children.
Very well said. And that's the problem we're all suffering with. Larkin, what do you have to ask our guest?
Yeah, Jim, that's a great point. And I've, as I look at the problems in America, Michael often asks us the spirit conversation, how would you change it? You know, where's the problem? Well, you know, and that's what I see as one of the big problems in this country is that we don't go back to the root of the problem. We spread a little putty on the top of it, sand it down and paint it and say that problem's fixed and
yes,
everything
indeed.
Underneath it. So you make a great point. I read an article, and I wish I could quote it some time ago, about a guy who said, you know, I had a paper route, and my father said, isn't that cool? And that's about as much as my father got engaged with that paper route. This guy said, with my children, I am desperately involved in having them cut grass for money and put money in the bank and have a checkbook and understand and to grow them up in an economy that says they're as much as important to free enterprise as the major corporations or those special jobs. We've deserted our children to a point that you have to use H-1B visas. Because you can't find anybody coming out of college anywhere that's got the talent to really, you know, carry that ball.
Yeah, but I'm sorry, Larkin, but I have to take exception with that. We don't really need those H-1B workers. And I read several cases where, for example, the entire IT department at Disney, Florida, and then Disney,
right.
California, the entire IT department and PricewaterhouseCoopers in Tampa were replaced by H-1B workers. They were perfectly capable. They just would cost too much money, and they decided, hey, if I can get somebody for 40% of what I'm paying you, then you're gone. And this is the problem, is that we parents who are trying to instill in our kids that work ethic, yes, you know, you work hard, you save, you go to college, you get that job. Well, in today's world, you may have that job, and just about the time your kids are getting where they're expensive, somebody's going to walk in on Friday and say, your Indian replacement is here on Monday. And that's not economy. That's not fair.
And by the way, to end your point, and I am not for H-1B visas at all. I think they should be immediately eradicated. But the support that they get is because we're not educating our children. But all that being said.
Yes, and I want you to know I totally agree with you on that point. And one of my big gripes is that people you know, like Bill Gates, who are one of these big users of the H-1Bs, he's sitting on billions of dollars in his foundation. Why doesn't he give scholarships to these kids? Because I can tell you what, we've got very bright kids, many of them who would go to the technical schools and learn those skills if they had an economic way to do it.
Yes, I agree, and that's what I mean about going back to the root of the problem and addressing that very issue. And by the way, what makes it even worse for Disney and all of the major corporations that pulled this H-1B sham is they told the people in Orlando, if you don't spend 2 to 3 weeks educating the incoming employee on how you do your job, you don't get any severance.
That's right. And worse than that was they had an employment agreement the severance agreement said, and yes, you have to train your Indian replacement, and you're not allowed to tell anybody about this.
That's the scary part of it. Jim, that is the scary part of it. I'm going to introduce you to Dr. Mark Andel, who is, by the way, who went through a very difficult situation, and I'm going to let him say a few words on that. Mark Andel.
Jim, how are you? Welcome aboard. You know, I think we're from the same fabric. I'm the one I read that author of What If Things Were Made in America Again, and it asks if Americans had let down its war dead this Memorial Day. I read it yesterday, had my girl find a link and send it to the show, and here you are on it. Number one, thank you. There's no higher honor to me than our veterans that serve our country. We wouldn't be on the radio today without them, so thank you for understanding and believing in that. You are very much like me. I'd love to send you a movie, and I don't know if you've seen it, called The American-Made Movie. It was done by a philanthropist out of Georgia, Clyde and Sandra Strickland, tobacco farmer, tough life, fell 8 stories, and then had a vision to make this movie a feature documentary film on where America is today after World War II, and really just a great, great movie, so I'd love to send you that. But what you stand for, what you wrote, rebuilding the middle class, you just nail it with this article. So what we're about, in 7 years, I lost half my business. I was a $12 million business in 2008, went to a $5 million business by 2010 with the recession and losing half my business to China directly. 70 employees, 18 family members, 3 guys I went to kindergarten with, and had to go down from 70 to 30 employees suddenly. Wow. And shockingly, and went woke up with an idea to open a Made in America store, make a statement for our country, soldier, American worker, and people that work with their hands. And 7 years later, we're celebrating May 20th, Armed Forces Day this year. We're at 7,000 products, support 486 privately owned businesses, and have 7 brick-and-mortar stores, 9 wholesale store and stores, with the message creating and saving jobs with every purchase for our consumers, and but yet have nothing that plugs in, not one item I can sell or that takes a battery, and that's a 35-year mistake in the United States of America. And like I tell everybody, we've got to the moon, so we've got the technology. We just got greedy, selfish, and lazy. So that's what I'm about, Jim. I'm all about with you. You know, I definitely want to connect with you after the show, but thank you for doing what you do.
It's such a great pleasure to meet you. I've been aware of your stores and very much an admirer of what you've done. I think it's fantastic.
Well, thank you.
Well, guys, I want to tell you, this has been very interesting. First of all, Jim, I'm going to ask you, what first started you on this project? Having worked in Washington, what's first made you say, I have to address this and write this book?
Well, they say entrepreneurs have their light bulb moment, and mine really did involve a light bulb. I got a light bulb out one night to replace, and I just happened to notice on the top of it was the GE logo, which stands for Thomas Edison and all that's great about America. And the only other thing there besides the wattage in all caps was the word China. And for some reason, that just, you know how sometimes you just have one of those moments that grabbed a hold of me, and I thought, this can't be good. If GE's making its light bulbs in China, but it also connected to a couple of other events just within a couple of days. I had been to the Boy Scout store, and everything I bought for my son was made in China, Vietnam, and Bangladesh. And I don't even think Boy Scouts are legal in Vietnam and in China. And then our church men's group had the chaplain of the Coatesville prison speak to us. And I worked in a prison ministry, so I know there's never an excuse for committing a crime, but I was thinking, wouldn't it be easier to keep the young men in Coatesville straight if they made anything there anymore? So this really light bulb moment grabbed a hold of me, and I decided I gotta look into this. So I looked into 3 questions. Why does it seem like everything's made somewhere else? Isn't that causing a problem? And if it is, what can be done about it? And I was off and running answering those questions, and the answers aren't easy to find. It took me 3 years to get the book done.
In its current frame, is Washington capable, Jim, of having these light bulb moments?
Well, you know, in general, I would say no, but I would say this. Washington listens to their constituents. And so if enough Americans have this light bulb moment, then Washington is going to get the message. So my hope is that we can, each of us, do our part to have America wake up to what's going on and start giving a different message to their representatives. I was really saddened to spend the first part of the book, and let me just interject about the Memorial Day subject. You know, I start the book out in 1945, and this is when in January of 45, our citizen soldiers were fighting the Battle of the Bulge. And then they came home, and my dad was one of the lucky ones who came home, and they all went to work, and they went to work in the steel mills and so on. And it just seems to me that I know our first duty is to our children, but don't we have a duty to them not to squander their patrimony that they gave their lives for? So that's really a large thing that makes me tick about this. But then I watched as we, starting in 1945, and for various reasons, fighting communism, rebuilding Japan. But the worst of them were these crazy free trade theories that our government officials, our politicians adopted that really sold us down the river for 70 years, 50 of them in what I call the Japan era, and then worse yet, these last 20 years in what you might call the China era.
And who's responsible? Not a political party, not a specific politician, not even a statesman. How did it happen? How did it get by us?
Well, there are a lot of parties to this. There are the economists. There are the people who write opinion pieces. There are the think tanks. You know, there's kind of the whole intelligentsia, if you will, who just got, went down the wrong road. It started really in the 1840s when England first adopted free trade. Thank goodness we didn't for a long time, but we finally did in 1934. People incorrectly blamed high tariffs, blamed the recession, the Great Depression on high tariffs. And so this political, to be honest with all of you guys, it's mystifying to me how it's like we're under the thrall of some, Harry Potter person, and people just are just marching to the step of this thing they call free trade and globalization when all the facts point to the fact that it didn't work.
It's been a big mistake. Many, many years it's been a mistake. Jim, I want to introduce you to another very special gentleman, Rich Loges, who's the principal of RJL Technology Integration and a weekly member of our panel. Rich.
Hey, Jim. Jim, good morning. I'm a doctor also. I've got a PhD, a public high school diploma, class of 95. So, and I actually had a pretty good education, I'd say. I graduated college in year 2000. I should have paid more attention in my high school classes. And even for someone who wasn't a great student, I can tell you I got a pretty good education. If I'd paid attention, I'd have been even better off. We're going to be buddies, Jim. I could tell you something. We're going to be buds because I've got likewise a book I'm publishing this year that is not really directly related to what you're saying about, but there's going to be some crossover. I guess I have a little bit of a more ominous approach, a little bit of a more ominous opinion about our youth. It's not to say that I don't believe we can reverse it. I'm a political independent, but I think by every measure and metric, never before has our youth been so badly. I mean, beyond the fact that we've failed them, how we fail them as young kids is how they're going to approach their adult life. And today's youth, they're the smartest, most innovative, most adaptive. They're doing fewer drugs. There's less drinking, but yet they're the dumbest group of smart people in world history. And it's not really their fault, Jim. Now, I'm not absolving them of responsibility. So we can look at it up and down. You can look at public education. You could look at colleges and universities. We could look at Harvard University this week that's holding it blacks only. So black graduates are going to have a black-only graduation. We are moving. We've got to get, the pendulum has never been as far left in America as it is right now. And I just want to be clear with you that I don't think we should swing this pendulum all the way to the far right either, because all the sides got their BS. All sides got a narrative. You know, you talked about think tanks. You talked about, the politicians. You talked about this. Everyone's selling a narrative. It's up to the American public to sift through that. And for us to try to align ourselves with people who can sell a message that is about this country first. We have the most, for all of our economic challenges, and we've got a lot of them, We are still, without question and by far, the most vibrant economy in the world and in the history of the world. And I'm with you, Jim, on this point. I refuse to believe that there is not a single industry, not one. I don't care. You name it. There's not a single industry in this country that the vast majority of people working in that industry can't be American. Bull. Bull. I don't care. You want technology, education, charities, healthcare, I don't care what. You name an industry. And there is no reason that the vast, vast majority of people who are going to work in that industry in this country cannot be American. And that's the difference in an approach between elected officials, elected by people, by voters, who are going to say, you know what, enough with the rest of the world, enough with bailing people out, enough with funding this country, and enough with going to war with some, you know, third world Sharia theocracy that's been the same way for 20,000 friggin' years. Let's start dealing with what's going on in America right now, and let's get serious about it. And I mean real serious about it.
I so agree with what you're saying.
Because we're teetering now. I really think that. And I think the election, last point, you know, I think the 2016 election was it for us. I think that was it. I think that was going to be our last election ever. And we would have just been under de facto Democrat Party empire rule forever. Doesn't mean I think it's good to have only Republicans. Again, just to be clear with you, that was it for us. And I don't think Trump's a savior. I don't think the president's a messiah. I don't believe that stuff that the left believes in. I like the messaging about Made in America. I'd like to see him lead from the front. But again, this is going to be a battle cry for us that there is not an industry in this country, in the most vibrant economy in the history of the world, that we can't have the vast majority of workers in it. Be American. That's what I think.
I certainly agree with that point. That is so true. And to think otherwise, you know, really is dangerous.
You know, Jim, I'm always amazed with the way politicians and some hierarchy in the communities tell me, Michael, Americans don't want to do that work. They're above that. I say, well, they're above that, but they're unemployed. So how are they above anything? They're depending on someone else. Dependency is not the way to do it.
No, that's right. I think independence should be our goal. And you know, the thing that flies in the face of that thinking is the articles you'll see where some warehouse where they're picking and shipping these foreign goods have 20 jobs available and 200 people show up for them. So the idea of people, I won't do that work, you know, I'm sorry, I'm just not buying that.
No, we've created this on our own. Our elected officials look the other way while 77,000, and I mean 77,000 industries that were located in this country moved abroad so they could get away from, number one, the taxation. Secondly, the regulations. And third, they just wanted to reduce the labor costs, and the people in America didn't respond until now. We've been really ringing the bell, and thank God for people like the members of this panel, Larkin, Rich, Mark, Henry, you know, all of us working together. We're really making an impact. I know, Jim, I go into stores where people are terrified to find out if I'm going to start speaking up in a higher tone, like, I can't find any card for Father's Day and this Made in America. Why is everything made in China and all? Well, they don't want to hear that. They right away, as soon as somebody comes over, they right away say, oh, did you find everything you want? So that I wouldn't start speaking up around the cash register. That's what you have to do. You have to be a bastard on wheels at times to get things done.
Jim, let me ask you something. Does your book ultimately come up with a solution? I mean, is there something that you come up with in this book that really is a long-term as well as a short-term solution?
Well, thank you so much for asking that, because I really do believe that the thing that sets my book apart is a final chapter that has a solution. And very early on in my light bulb moment, I realized, you know, if consumers are 70% of the economy, we could solve this problem just by our purchasing decisions. Well, and we don't need to bring home all of our spending. We could bring home enough to balance trade. That would be $500 billion a year. Well, that would create 6 million jobs. 6 million jobs would take the slack out of the economy, get wages going up again, and get a virtuous circle going again. So the happy thing about this is that I'd like all our listeners to know that consumers right now, today, hold the solution to this problem in their hands in our buying decisions. And not only that, but it's only consumers who can solve this problem. Policymakers can't solve it. Companies can't solve it. If a company is making something here and their competitor is making it in Mexico for a tenth of the wage, the company here can't compete. As long as people are ready to buy that cheaper product that was made in Mexico. So only consumers can solve it. But the happy, happy solution is the solutions to our economic problems are not building more infrastructure. It's not, yes, we need to educate our kids better, but it's not to try to get them all into college jobs. It's for consumers to step up and say, I'm going to support a community in America somewhere with my next purchase.
Right.
So there's not... there's not tax funding in the government. There's not a tariff and that type of thing.
That's what I love about this. It's so elegant and simple that we don't have to ask anybody to support us, and we don't have to ask anybody for permission. Because nobody can make you buy that shirt that's made in Vietnam or stop you from buying that shirt that was made in Reading, Pennsylvania. And, yes, it costs more, but that's because you paid somebody to make it instead of 16 cents an hour to some poor woman in Bangladesh.
Hey, Jim, Mark here, just amen. I mean, we're on the same exact consumer. I say vote with your dollar. You know, your consumer has the most power. You may or may not know I own General Welding and Fabricating with a motto. It's a welding, fabricating, manufacturing company with a motto, you dream it, we build it. So right now we're getting back into, we manufacture trailers and a lot of things for our stores. But we're getting back into oil and mining work and military work, and things are picking up. Our number one problem in your next book has to be the shortage of skilled workers in America. I cannot, right now, yesterday, I called Penn State, I called Ohio Tech, I called Alfred College. I am looking for welders. The most frustrating part, we had a big two-and-a-half-year gap with work, and we have to find welders and workers, and there just aren't any out there. So, you know, we're all on the same page, but it's. I'd love to sell your book, too, so I hope I can sell it in our stores for you.
Jim, and all of our panel members and all of our listeners, I can't believe this half hour went so quickly with our guests. But I'm going to ask our guests to return real soon because we need a lot of time together. Together, we are talking about real solutions in America. Closing remarks. Jim, thank you for being with us. We're going to have to link your book, and we'll have to get you back real, real soon.
Thank you very much. And I would just add that for any more information on my research, one can go to miaa.us, madeinamericaagain.us, miaa.us.
Very good, and we'll post that on our site.
Very good.
Final remarks. Mark.
Thank you, Mike, for bringing people like Jim together. Just great things you've been doing for years. Thank you.
And Larkin.
Jim, I'll have a chance to read your book, and the next time you come on, I'll be in a position to really discuss it with you.
I'll look forward to that.
And Dr. Rich.
Jim, thank you so much. Rich here. I'm going to email you right now on miaa.us for our listeners. Looking forward to getting to know you more. Thank you.
Jim Stuber, what a great. He's got a great book, What If Things Were Made in America Again? Well, ladies and gentlemen, until this Saturday at 11 or next Wednesday at 11 here on 860, I want to wish you and yours the very best. You will hear a rebroadcast of today's show on the internet. It'll be up in about 2 hours. Simply go to AmericanWorkersRadio.com. Have a great one.
Have a good week, guys.
Thanks, everyone.